All right, welcome to Porsche Club Insider Podcast. This is not the first time that PCA is doing a podcast. In fact, we did a podcast back in the late 2000s. I'm here. I'm Vu Nguyen. I'm PCA's executive director, and I have Manny Albin, the latest addition to the PCA staff, our technical director. Manny, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You just reminded me about that podcast many years ago about the autocross. I think we're before our time. Podcasts weren't that popular as they are now, and maybe not as easy to get to as it is now.
Yeah, what we did was we recorded, I think it was a podcast on autocrossing and maybe DE, and we actually just hosted it on our website as opposed to today's podcast where you host it where people can download from various streaming podcast services, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was, I remember getting a lot of feedback from it, so must have found it.
It was a great episode, and you know, that's the whole idea of coming back to podcasts. Obviously, podcasts nowadays are much more popular, all sorts of topics. You can learn a lot. And you know, we're committed to doing the podcast again. And hopefully this is a new avenue or bringing back an avenue that we can give members as well as non-members some information, some inside information on what's going on with Porsche as well as with PCA.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of members realize that the national office not only helps obviously members and volunteers, but also is looking to bring in new members. And a lot of that's through content creation and using media. So anything gets our name out there to reach Porsche owners or potential Porsche owners to join a club, that's important.
So let's give our listeners sort of a inside scoop of what we're going to be talking about today.
So we got, we're going to talk about, it's almost like what we do at staff meetings at the national office. You'll get a little flavor of that. Who's going to talk about some upcoming events that national host. We'll have Rob Sass, our editor, on to talk about some of what's going on in Panorama, coming up, interesting articles. Damon Lowney will talk about videos he's working on, once again, content creation. And then we're going to finish up with the bike ride. The long since I came on in April, I heard about this bike ride, and it finally happened this past weekend. So it'll be fun to hear the behind the scenes of what really happened.
And I think our goal with this podcast is, you know, today we have some topics to cover, but hopefully listeners, members, non-members will give us some ideas of what they'd like to hear, what's going on with PCA. And obviously, if we have some cutting edge news from Porsche or PCA, we'll definitely put that into the topics as well. All right, so let's talk about what's coming up in PCA. Right off the bat, October 13th through 16th will be the Treffen at the America Club in Wisconsin. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, Treffen, that's an event that was only, associated with their trip to Germany, the factory trip. Mm-hmm. And then we made a Treffen USA, and boy, it really took off. This was a higher scale event that PCA came up with, David O'Neill, and he really saw that there was a need for a little bit better, a little nicer accommodation, nicer food, limited type of an event. And it's, 3 or 4 days of social and driving. It's tours, exactly. Tour all day, and then you have dinner together, and it's all pre-planned and preset, and they sell out almost immediately.
They do, and it is a different program. We have, you know, what I love about PCA is we offer a diverse program of things that you can do, right? You can do the social stuff. You can do tours with your local. You can do zone events. Nationally, you can do Porsche Parade, which is the most amazing event ever. But then this Treffen here is more of a quaint couples retreat, 4 days, five-star restaurants, five diamond hotels, no competition at all. It's all about tours and just hanging out with like-minded people and driving their Porsches on beautiful roads. And you know, the Treffen in Wisconsin is no different. It's going to be at a beautiful hotel, the American Club. They will also have lots of tours. They'll be around the Kohler family and the Kohler manufacturing. Those of you that are familiar with that name or think you know that name, it's because usually when you're going to the restroom, you see the name Kohler, and that's the Kohler that we're talking
and
about.
And I think they have a museum. If I remember when we had the parade in Wisconsin or Milwaukee, they actually had like a toilet museum.
That's going to be interesting. I didn't realize.
Not that. Interactive, I was told. But it was a museum of all the different toilets they've ever made. So you know.
Should be a good one.
Never boring.
All right, let's see. Tech Tactics. We've been on, what are we, 35th, 36th episode?
It'll be 36, yeah.
36th episode and November 6th. What are we talking about?
That will be about installing aftermarket seats in your car. So really targeted towards people who are probably on doing track events or autocrossing, want to get a seat that's a little bit more high performance and what's involved, because it's simply not going out there and just buying a seat and expecting just to bolt it in. It's going to perform just like a regular seat. There's a lot more involved. So we have Tom Chan from TPC Racing, who's going to come around, and he's going to show us, you know, what to look for. And actually, Damon's going to be bringing his Cayman into the garage, and we're going to see the struggles he had with making these seats fit into his car. Once again, it's not a matter of going on Amazon and finding a seat and just expecting it everything to fit perfectly. There's a lot more involved to it.
Absolutely. That's probably one of my favorite upgrades for any car, is having a sporty seat, so to speak, installed, because it really does make a difference on how the car feels and what you can feel with what the car is doing in high-performance driving environments. For those of you that aren't familiar with Tech Tactics Live, it's based off of our YouTube channel. If you just go to YouTube and go to Porsche Club of America, you'll see not only all the other videos that we do, but you'll see the schedule and past Tech Tactics Live events. And what's fun with Tech Tactics Live, what I really enjoy, is if you watch it live on Wednesday, you'll get to interact and ask questions.
Yeah, plus they have a couple door prizes they give out. You don't have to be a member to participate. You do have to be in the in North America in order to win. We don't ship to Europe or Asia, but yeah, anyone can watch it and participate. Half the fun is the comments.
Yeah, the live chat is pretty lively. Next up in November 14th, we have a new event called Unstock.
Yeah, it's spelled like Unstock, but it's a word that you created, or your wife, I think.
Right? I think I can give my wife that crown there. And the whole idea behind Unstock was, I think wrongly so, a lot of people think that PCA only treasures completely stock vehicles. Certainly we treasure cars that are stock, but that's not the only cars that we treasure. And I come from a background where I modified everything from my skateboard to my bicycle. Everything that I had has been modified. So when I got into the Porsche world, it was kind of different to see not as many modified Porsches. But fast forward to today, especially in the Southern California area, you certainly see a lot of modified Porsches. In the past decade or so, you've heard about, you know, the R group type of cars that are modified, and people, you know, at the end of the day, it's your car, enjoy it, do what you want to it, but we haven't really celebrated that, right? So Unstock is going to be an event in Huntington Beach at the Gunther Works headquarters, where we will put a spotlight on modified cars.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it because I love an original car. I mean, a row of straight Boxsters all stock isn't as exciting as a row of modified Boxsters, because you get to see how the owners individualize each one of them. I mean, Porsche is into it as well. Their whole exclusive program is basically factory modifications done by Porsche. So this is people doing their own modifications to the car and their own interpretation of what their dream car is. But it's going to be it's going to be exciting to come watch. And I think it's free, right, to watch?
Yeah, it's going to be free to come check out all the cars. There will be a registration for those that want to show their cars. And if you want to show your car, you actually have to submit the modifications you've done to the car, list them out, and send some pictures. So that way we make sure that it is indeed, a visible modification. If you change your shift knob and change something small that's, I don't want to say insignificant, but we want cars that, you can see the personality when you walk up to it.
And it's being held at Gunther Works, their headquarters, I guess. Absolutely. I've never been out there. I know you have. That's going to be cool in itself. I guess they're going to open their doors so you can see.
So if you haven't seen a Gunther Works car, you haven't been to Gunther Works headquarters, it's pretty amazing. The cars obviously will be out there. We're not sure with the with COVID restrictions and such how much you'll be able to go into their headquarters to see their operations, but surely they'll bring stuff out. We're going to have, not only their cars, but we're going to reach out to the other shops in Southern California. We're hoping to meet with some car builders at SEMA and invite them to bring their cars to the event as well. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be completely different from anything that we've done before. We're going to have a DJ. It's going to be later in the day. It's, just come for those that are not showing a car. They can just roll up, park in. It's sort of in an industrial park. You can just park on the side roads. It's on a Sunday, so there shouldn't be any problems parking. Just walk up, enjoy the show. We'll have food trucks and hang out for a couple hours.
Yeah, and you'll see it promoted within PCA, or you can just Google, Unstock PCA.
That's right.
Unstock, as we're pronouncing it.
Yeah, and you can always check Tuesday evenings on eBrake News. We'll have announcements there, or just check PCA.org for more information.
And eBrake News, for listeners who aren't PCA members, that's an electronic newsletter that Damon does, and comes out Tuesday night into Wednesday, and it's every week, and it's all Porsche PCA content related, and it's where you find all the promoted events, especially national events.
Yeah, and what I've always said, the whole reason why eBrake exists is so that you can get all of what's going on in the Porsche world, in the PCA world, and be ready for Cars and Coffee on Saturday and make sure that you know what's going on, because it's almost like if you missed the game and then you go to your buddy's house and they talk about the game.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't have the inside information, you feel left out. So we make sure you know what's going on by emailing you eBrake News. So the last event in November for us nationally would be the LA Auto Show.
That's still a question mark, I guess, right? Because normally we would have a member breakfast, which sells out within minutes, where PCA members are invited to the LA Auto Show before the doors open, which you don't realize how special that is until you've been there after the doors open and realize it's a sea of humanity. But I'm not sure if they're going to have that this time, are they?
So the latest information I have is all is moving forward. In fact, they are looking forward to bringing some new cars that will be unveiled to the world. We are still planning to have a member breakfast there. Again, just stay tuned with eBrake News as well as the PCA website. We'll make sure we let everyone know how to register. It's not expensive to do, but it's a great opportunity to walk the Porsche display floor before the world gets there, meaning they will have the cars unlocked. You can sit in them. You can meet with the product specialists. You'll get presentations from folks from Germany or from Atlanta, and it's also a nice breakfast. And then once you're done touring the Porsche booth, it also allows you to visit the rest of the show.
Yeah, it's worth it just for that hour where you can get in all these Porsches that they're all open, and they have the Porsche people that answer questions. And you can tell when the doors are going to open to the public, because the employees go around very quietly and start locking all the doors of the Porsches.
Yeah.
And then you see the breakfast rolled back behind the curtains, and then the rest of humanity comes in, and it becomes a whole different atmosphere. So, yeah, if you can get a ticket to that member breakfast, that's a place to be.
And that also sells out pretty quickly. I wouldn't say it sells out within minutes, but it sells out pretty quickly. So make sure you stay on top of when the tickets go on sale, and we do it through, I believe, Motorsports Reg. Let's see. We have a couple of guests here. We have Rob Sass, Damon Lowney, and Gregory Brown. So let's bring Rob Sass, our Panorama editor, to the table and talk about what's coming up in Pano.
I think we're going to shame him a little bit, because Rob showed up yesterday. We had known he was doing this, that he was buying a... Rob loves other Mark cars, which is fine.
You know? We all love other yes. cars.
We've all made mistakes in life. He gets spoiled by the German efficiency. And so he went to an English car with an American engine. What could go wrong with that? I mean, Shelby did it right with the Cobra. And so he got a TVR, which, we found out actually stood for Trevor Wilkinson. Is that right, Rob?
Yes, as far as you know.
You got to love a car named after the first name of the guy who founded the company.
Like that never happens.
Well, wish his name was Bob. It would have been so much more more cool.
Well, I've always been intrigued by TVRs. I mean, they, like you said, it's sort of like the formula of what Cobra and other cars, where it's like, you know, British or chassis built somewhere else, and then takes a quote unquote reliable American engine and maybe suspension and put it together, and then comes out with a very unique car. But yeah, seeing this TVR in person, yeah, it was interesting. It's interesting.
Definitely handmade.
Definitely handmade.
Definitely handmade.
Borderline homemade, but
I think it's the R&D was still in the works. He showed up to the office, the PCA office, and I jokingly said to the people inside the office, I said, let's go look at the car before it breaks down. As a joke, because it was an English car, and sure enough, we got out there, and I could smell antifreeze, but I didn't want to say anything, but someone else noticed it dripping. So fortunately, because the car is so easy to work on, we saw right away that the belt had cut into the hose. I think by design, maybe.
The charm of that car is, in fact, that it is pretty easy to work in. You know, work and figure out what's wrong with it, right? Like, I don't think there's a computer in it, and it's just a straight up belt, and you know, fix everything with a set of pliers or a crescent.
But you could go to the auto parts store and you found the hose.
Yep,
and you fixed it.
It was just a basic coolant hose, and replaced it, and off we went. And then this morning I find him in the middle of our parking lot broken down again.
But the best part is he's going to drive this car how many miles to the Aldrin Concours?
I don't know, like 400 miles?
400.
This is where I will give Rob big time props. This man will climb into any car, any condition, and drive unknown miles and be perfectly stress-free. Like, I would be stressed driving his TVR just home 10 minutes. He will drive that thing to Audrain and just smile and smile and smile until it breaks.
Is your left hand on?
Call a flatbed. They pick it up.
Which he has.
They bring it someplace. They fix it. A week later, they call you. You fly there. You pick it up. You drive it.
Or we not. All do that.
He understands plan B very well.
Exactly.
And in fact, you were 914 when you drove it down to Amelia. It drove like a dream, but you had just gotten that car, climbed into it, drove to Amelia, and I believe on the way back, your 914 decided that it would take a vacation.
No fault of the 914s, really. Most of the fuel lines were original, and they don't really like ethanol very much, and that's kind of what happened is they kind of melted from the inside out.
It didn't catch fire, did it?
It did not catch fire.
Oh,
yeah.
And again, he's just, that's what I love about Rob is he doesn't even think about the potential consequences. He just gets in and drives. Like, I look at his car and I go, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. But I don't think you think that way. And that, you know, kudos to you.
Because I had a Halon fire extinguisher with me. No, I mean, that's what you sign up for. When you buy an old car, shit is going to break, and that's just the nature of the thing. I mean, if that's not what you want, if that's not what you signed up for, that's fine. You know, that's why they have CPO cars. That's why they have new cars with warranties.
And that's one of the things that we want to do a Tech Tactics Live about why you don't want to own an air-cooled Porsche, which I know is heresy. And as you say, they'll be coming out with pitchforks. But the reality is a lot of people who ask me, and I'm sure you get asked this all the time about air-cooled cars, it's from people who have never owned an air-cooled car, and their first Porsche is a 991 or a 718 Boxster, and they want to jump into the air-cooled. And 30 years old, you know, the newest one, a little bit less, but nonetheless, it's an old car. And no matter, even though it's a Porsche and it's German, things are going to break on it. Or not
things
work
are
as
not
well.
Going to work properly in the first place. I mean, people who are used to water-cooled 911s are used to really good HVAC. The heat is hot, the air is cold, and all of that stuff works really well, and not so much in an air-cooled car.
Yeah, and you know, my first experience was when I went to do a PPI on my 87 911. I had come from, you know, Mustangs and cars with tons of torque and all that stuff, and kind of when I met my hero in doing this PPI for my 87, I remember just like right off the start, just first gear, second gear, like it was not that fast. And I was kind of disappointed. Like, here's my hero car I'm about to buy.
And the V6 Accord next to you is faster.
Yeah.
That's kind of a buzzkill.
It was, but you know, I was like already committed to the transaction with, you know, if it passes the PPI, I'm going to get it. Right. So I still bought it, but it wasn't until I bought it. My buddy in Rhode Island found the car for me, and I drove it back from Rhode Island to Maryland. And it wasn't until I was on the Jersey Turnpike in third gear and getting ready to pass somebody, and you know, speeds above the speed limit. I won't say what it was, but that's when the car really kind of came alive, and I was like, "Oh, this is what it's all about."
Yeah, but the simplicity of air cooled cars, though, is a huge positive. There are a lot of things that, I mean, there is no power steering rack to leak, there is no water pump to worry about, and the same, they're remarkably consistent in terms of what tends to fail on them. Everybody is going to replace the column switches. You know, your brights will activate themselves automatically, and it's time to replace that switch. The blower motors go. Alternators last every 30,000 miles, 40,000 miles.
Midwinter, you figure out the HVAC, how to get heat.
Right. Yeah, or not. But, or the my favorite thing, personally, my favorite air-cooled memory, and I've had this happen in all six of the air-cooled 911s that I've owned, is when you get a light snow, and snow accumulates around that cowl vent, that black, you know, cowl vent, and you turn on the defroster, you turn on the blower, you get the snow globe effect. I love that when it's snowing inside your car. You just don't get that in new cars.
And the other thing is, if you can figure out what all the symbols mean for the HVAC.
Oh, I never have. I've owned like five or six of them. I've never figured that out.
Things that slide horizontally on the dash, and you got levers to pull down by the
e-brake. Why are there three of the sliders?
Yeah.
I played a game of don't notice anything. Switch it over. Still don't notice anything.
Right.
But the 914, my 964 is at least has climate control, and it's even though it's in Celsius, you can get a pretty good idea of where you are temperature-wise. But the 914,
it's still either
too hot or too cold.
Well, yeah. There's two things that people don't consider or maybe are not aware of when they get into an air-cooled car that I think is kind of significant, especially if you plan to use it with your significant other. And one of it is, what happens when you guys have driven your air-cooled cars for maybe just half an hour and then come back home and see your family? Like, they know you've driven an air-cooled car. Yeah, why?
You stink.
Exactly. Yeah. You definitely stink.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that before.
But, again, we appreciate that. That's a nice aroma to us.
Right,
but to the rest of the world, they're like, you smell like a bucket of oil.
Right, or as my 9-year-old once said when he was a lot younger, "Daddy, were you on fire?"
And the other thing, most, not all, but most air-cooled cars, if you have a beautiful white driveway or stone driveway and you plan to park that thing on your driveway, what's going to happen?
The oil return tubes will go drip, drip, drip.
Yeah. Your car will leave a mark.
Yes.
That's why they have power washers. That's power washers and degreasers.
But see, this is the stuff that new car owners don't have to deal with.
No.
Yeah.
No. But having said all that, the experience of driving an air-cooled car is amazing because, one, you can, you know, rev it to the moon, drive it hard, still doing, you know, not crazy insane speeds, but you feel so connected to these cars that it's very hard. I think every generation car gets a little softer, gets a little less engaging. And if you go back to the 80s and 90s or air-cooled cars, you really connect with them. And I think that's why people are so attracted to them.
Right. But it's, you know, it's getting harder and harder to connect with them. I don't have one now. I've had six. The last one I had, I daily drove from about 2011 to 2014. And prices have just gone crazy over the last,
you know, six figures. Six figures for G-body cars?
Yeah.
Six figures. Like back in the day, like the average car at a DE would be a G-body car that you could probably pick up anywhere between 20 to 30 grand. Now right. they're six figures.
Right. And six figures in a G-body car used to be, you know, that was an MFI Carrera or that 89 G50 coupe with no miles on it. You know, that might have flirted with, you know, $80,000 or $90,000. But now, you know, cars are breaking six figures all the time and they're just not that remarkable of specimens.
And if you go past the 88s, 89s and go into 993 territory, especially like 993 turbo territory. I remember 5 years ago when a buddy of ours, or Mike Levitis over at TPC, bought a pristine 993 turbo for like $60,000, and we thought that was all the money. Most recently at auction, what do we see? Gregory Brown, I think that 993 turbo went for like 205 or 210. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
It is insane because I remember when I had my last SC that I sold in 2014, there was barely a premium between a good SC and kind of a run-of-the-mill 930. I mean, you could, in a lot of cases, there was maybe a $10,000 premium for a 930 over an SC, and that just seemed crazy at the time. And sure enough, you know, that situation has changed.
My concern is, we're pricing people out of the car brand that we love. And for younger folks especially, you know, if we want this hobby to continue and the brand passion to continue, how are these younger folks able to afford these cars?
I don't know. It's a scary thought. We were talking about the car that you picked in Mark Fresh today, which was, it was a base 944. It was a
Beautiful, nice car.
Very good-looking car, 155,000 miles. And it was $10,000. And to me and to both of us in, you know, the early fall of 2021, that seemed like a really, really good deal, like a car that's mm-hmm. not going to be in the mart very long. And the fact is, 2 years ago,
that was a $5,000
car.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the entry level stuff has doubled in the last 2 years.
But still, though, I mean, $10,000, yes, it's 150,000 miles. I think those motors, if properly prepared, can probably easily get to 200. And it's not a car you buy as a daily driver, but right. you can enjoy that for many years to get it to, say, 200,000 miles and have a classic car and have the Porsche, you know, parked in the driveway. That's
pretty cool. No question. I mean, if that car has a clean PPI, the miles wouldn't worry me at all. It had new belts, new rollers, really good maintenance. It looked in the interior and every place, it looked like a very clean car. So I'd have no reservations about the miles on that car. It's just that 2 years ago, the market would have said, yeah, with those miles, this is a $5,000 car. And that's not the case anymore.
So the car that Rob's referring to is a car that I chose for Mark Fresh. If those of you that are listening aren't subscribed to eBrake News, what we do is every 2 weeks, we pick three or four of our favorite Porsches that are in the PCA Mart, our own classified section. And we pick the cars and we sort of give the reason why. And that was my car this week.
Yeah, it's a good one. And you can guess what color it was.
Guards red with black Fuchs. I mean, couldn't get more classic than that.
No, right out of 16 candles.
So let's shift gears and go over to what's going on in Panorama.
Before we do that, I want to hear from Rob. What do you think is going to be at the LA Auto Show? Think Porsche is going to come out with?
I have no idea. What do you think, Manny?
Well, you talk to their press people more than we do. What do you think?
They don't tell me anything, Manny.
He's under embargo.
They came out the GTS.
Right.
Usually the LA Auto Show is one of these, I forgot the term to use.
The Carrera T was a couple of years ago. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But No, I have no idea. We can speculate all day long, but...
Well, just from spy photos, what we've seen, you know, they still haven't formally announced the Cayman RS, right?
Right,
yeah. So that, to me, it's they got to be ready to release that. They got to be ready to announce. I mean, that's been... I've seen spy photos of that almost a year ago testing on the Nürburgring, so...
Yeah, I got to imagine there's going to be... I mean, Porsche is fairly predictable when they roll out their cars, right? And in terms of like turbo and then standard and then S, and then we're kind of at the cycle where it should be some sort of special edition 911, I would think. Mm-hmm. And then, as Manny said, we've been, you know, hearing about this GT4 RS right. for a year now.
And the and everybody GT3 else, RS, too.
Not to name any other podcasts, but everybody else has speculated about a new supercar. I don't think that's going to happen.
I would think they would save that for 2023.
Right, or at least the 75th anniversary. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, with the whole Mission R, I mean, there hasn't been many venues for them because of all the cancellations due to COVID of big shows. LA Auto Show is kind of like it for a while. So will they fly that Mission R car out?
The one they debuted, supposedly Cayman.
Yeah, Cayman based.
I would think that would be there.
I would think so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I would definitely... I'm sure they would love to show that off, but what's coming up, and it's already been seen in several places, so mm-hmm. it's not something secret anymore, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, supercar, that's the big talk. But I would think with 2023 being the 75th anniversary of Porsche, that they would hold off until then, because I don't think who else is coming up for supercar this year. No talk of any of the big manufacturers that I know of coming out. So, yeah, anyways, it'll be interesting. It's always interesting at the LA Auto Show to see what they
Well, you and Damon will be there for the press day on Wednesday, so hopefully you'll get an early scoop for us. And then we will be there on Friday with the early breakfast group. And if we're lucky, maybe in between that Thursday, if we can get some early access, Mark Harston, we're talking to you here, if we can get some early access and do some videos on the floor there. Now, what we normally do is with LA Auto Show is we have the breakfast on Friday, but then that leads into Tech Tactics West at the training center out there. But unfortunately, we're not able to do that this year due to COVID restraints and stuff. So, or COVID restrictions. So hopefully we can do something like that on Thursday and have like one-on-one with the product specialists on the floor of the show.
Right. And in media days, there are always fun. There's always something weird that shows up. Like 3 or 4 years ago, it was the flying car. 5 years ago, it was something called the Uabian Puma. If you haven't seen this car, Google it. Every automotive journalist there called it out as being the most hideous thing they've ever seen. And the maker of the car sued them all.
Great. Well, yeah. Don't say anything more because we don't get sued.
So you'll buy it in about 10 years. We'll see it. Bring a trailer.
I have no idea where this car is today. Anyway, but in terms of what's coming up in Panorama, anybody who's talked to me about sort of what the editorial philosophy of the magazine is knows that I'm really a fan of stories that are more experiential. I mean, it's fun to go shoot a giant collection, particularly one that nobody's ever seen. The White Collection a few years ago was great. But for the most part, shooting cars behind velvet ropes is not what we want to do. So we've got a story that's coming up about a person who's got kind of a macabre collecting focus. He's really fascinated by the Widowmakers, the cars that have kind of an evil reputation of being tough to master and unforgiving. So at a private track in the Netherlands, we're going to go drive an early 930 from 1975, a Carrera GT, and a 996 GT2, and see just how badly these cars really want to kill the drivers. So that should be interesting. It should be a lot of fun. It's a story that we've had in the works for a while. We're also going to cover an event called the Rebel Rally. It's a hardcore, all-women's off-road navigation rally. The team that we're following, we're covering, is going to be driving an E1 Cayenne Turbo S in this 8-day, no GPS event that involves compass headings, hidden checkpoints, time and distance. The scenery, the stories, and the photography, I think, are going to be just absolutely bonkers. And at this point, who doesn't love an E1 Cayenne?
I know I love my E1 Cayenne, absolutely.
Yeah. I love mine.
So where's that rally at?
It's all the Western United States, and okay. It takes place in 9 days.
So speaking of the E1 Cayenne, that was never, I don't think it was never produced and destined to be a classic, but the E1 Cayenne has now officially entered Porsche Classics parts book.
Well, it's also officially entered Bring a Trailer, too. We all remember the 2008 manual transmission GTS that sold for $95,000 about a month ago.
Oh, I don't get that. I mean, I've driven a manual Cayenne And it is interesting, but to me, a manual in a Cayenne just doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
and
but did you drive a manual base car?
Don't hate me for saying that, but...
Was it a six-cylinder base car or was it a GTS?
No, it was a GTS. Okay. It was Linda Bynes, a past Zone Rep's car, and it was cool, but for what you use and how you drive a Cayenne, a manual doesn't make sense.
Plus, the gearing is funky. I mean, let's face it, first gear is incredibly short.
It's cool shifting. For everybody to see that you have a GTS.
Right.
In a manual.
Right.
Yes,
and you want to make sure that for anybody else who's looking in the window, you're exaggerating your shifts.
Right, so and you can blip the throttle when you come to the light or when you take off. I get it, but the premium that you're paying for a 6-speed, I will gladly save that premium and just get an automatic, which is just as fun to drive.
Right, we're considering an automatic, you know, 08 GTS is a $17,000 or $18,000 car versus $95,000 for that.
Yeah, but
and that's a pretty stout motor. They haven't had any. They've had issues with the cooling pipes and some other things, but the motor itself doesn't have any IMS issues or leakage problems. It's
a
pretty stout engine.
I've never added any oil to mine in between changes. It's almost eerie. It's
are you checking?
Once in a while. I mean, I've added maybe a quarter of a quart in between. I mean, it's really
I think what does yours have, Vu? How many miles?
So I'm on 136,000 miles, and you know there are we have a what to look for when buying a Cayenne video, I believe, and there's only a handful of things from the drive shaft coupler or whatever that you need to that wears out. You obviously coolant pipes, as Manny mentioned. Coil packs, for some reason, coil packs in a Cayenne just go for no reason. And, you know, there's, if you have air suspension, maybe that's could be an issue.
The keyless entry system gets wonky occasionally.
Occasionally. But other than that, it's been a fantastic vehicle. And it's the Porsche that we use the most. And it's fun to drive highway or on occasion. If it's the only car that we have at, say, Porsche Parade, we'll go out and flog it at the autocross. And it'll do quite well.
Yeah, you know, only the occasional, you know, when you're driving it around town and driving it hard, I've seen single-digit fuel economy.
Yes, you do need to understand that it is not the most efficient in terms of gas. I mean, you're getting, on average, 15 miles to the gallon.
Right, if you live on the West Coast where premium fuel is $5 a gallon or more, those, you know, $150 fill-ups are going to get old. But that's really about it.
Yep.
As far as, you know, anything else coming up in the magazine, I think the special issues that we've done lately have been pretty fun. And in January, we're doing a follow-up to the first design issue that we did in 2021 in January. That was the one where Michael Allen Ross shot, basically, it was, you know, kind of his 200-page masterpiece. And the elements of it and the cars will obviously be different this year, but MAR is shooting the whole thing again. And anyone who is familiar with Michael's work knows what that means. So we're really looking forward to the first issue of 2022.
Well, I really have to commend you and the Panorama team for, you know, keeping Panorama at its level. And in fact, probably elevating it through, you know, the difficult year that we've had. You know, a lot of cars in the past, a lot of stories have come from events that we've either held or events that we've attended. And, you know, since the pandemic, there hasn't been many. So the fact that you, the team, the photographers, and finding individuals to still share the story of their cars and keep the pages full and vibrant and you know, keeping all of our sponsors and advertisers happy with what content we're producing, kudos to you guys.
I appreciate that. And the team is fantastic. You know, all of our freelancers, Richard Barron, our art director, Amy Skugstrom, our executive editor, you know, there's a combined probably 200 years of automotive publishing experience behind it.
Let's see if we have Damon Lowney around and we can bring him to the stage, so to speak, and talk about what's going on with digital media.
Alrighty. Hello, everybody. I'm Damon Lowney, the digital media coordinator for Porsche Club of America.
So for those of you that have been to PCA events, usually Damon is the one running around with the camera trying to get the shot or trying to make sure we capture video to share with all of our members and those that watch YouTube. But also he's in charge of a lot of the content on Facebook, on all the YouTube videos. He's editing, he's filming, he's a jack of many trades.
That's correct.
And for those who've never been to the PCA office, six of us sit in a pod of cubicles, and Damon sits on the serious side, I found out, because it's him, Robert Forsythe, the digital architect, and both of them are always wearing headphones because Damon's doing a lot of editing, and then Mariella, our events manager, and then the other side is Connor Henderson, Club Racing, very young guy, about 27, I think, Jim Hemmig, the marketing, and then me. And that's where evidently the interesting conversations come out of the most mundane things that we discuss Porsche related. So Damon is on the serious side. So every time you look at him, he's at least faking that he's working because he's got these headphones on. He's intensely looking at his screens.
I don't know that that side is the serious side. They've just got their head down trying to stay under their radar and just kind of cranking out the work. And I see, you know, I know how much video, how much content that he constantly has to go through, and he works with multiple contractors to make sure that we're pumping out videos once a week, social media on a daily basis. So he's just got his head down low and just cranking work out.
Yeah, no, definitely it's a bit quieter in the office when it's just the three people on our side. And it gets a little bit louder and more interesting when Manny, Connor, and Jim are in the office. So, but it spices things up. We're happy to be back in the office and have sort of a work community again. Vu touched off on our YouTube channel, and one of the things we've done this year is made a commitment to film and publish one video per week, which for the most part we've stayed on track with, which means that there are videos coming out. One today is we did a review of the Panamera GTS, which if you want to see the review of a Panamera GTS, a base model, a Turbo S, and I believe a 4S, which Rob Sass drove in Michigan, we have a panorama story out, and then a video on the base model Panamera versus the Turbo S that's already come out, and the Panamera GTS today. So by the time this podcast is published, that will be on our YouTube channel. So for those who know me, I own a 987 Cayman, and it's received a lot of work this year that I've done in my garage and at the PCA National Office. And we've also taken the car to Olin's USA down in Hendersonville, North Carolina, for a special video of putting the car on a shake rig, which tests out the suspension and to make sure that the springs and the shocks are well matched to each other. And what happens when you change the stock suspension and go to a coilover setup, like the Olin's Road and Track coilovers that I put on my car. So we have a video out on that. Some of the content we've gotten out of my 987 Cayman has been going down to Olin's USA in Hendersonville, North Carolina. We put the car on a shake rig, tested it when it was stock with stock springs and shocks, and tested it after I installed a set of Olin's Road and Track coilovers. So if you want to see the results of our shake rig tests, head over to PCA's YouTube channel and search for one of our recent videos where we shake a Porsche Cayman. We've also gotten another video out of that. I was filming myself when I installed the coilovers, and that video should be published early October, so potentially around when this podcast is hitting the air, you'll be able to watch that video. Hopefully.
What about the video where you beat Vu in an autocross? Because I know this is what it all led up to.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Trip to South Carolina, all this testing.
The reason why he's dumping this money and effort into this car.
Yep. And I think Vu retired, because wasn't that the last autocross he's done?
Yeah, I haven't seen him in autocross yet, so yeah. I'm not quite sure.
I think he's looking into concourse now. Maybe that's where he can start winning, because
Damon just
ran over him like Verstappen over Hamilton.
I wouldn't go that far, but basically, Vu and I have a little rivalry. And lately, he's been beating me by half a second to a second. And I figured, why improve the driver when you can just buy
his way?
That's how Porsche makes money.
So that's what I did. So I've beaten him once, but that could be a ringer.
Once.
That could be a ringer. We'll see at the next autocrosses, maybe next year, since we're running out of time. in the autocross season. But yeah, so watch that video. It'll be out by the time this podcast airs of how to install a coilover suspension. Hopefully I got everything right. Pretty sure I did. But if I didn't, you'll know what not to do. Also coming up is I installed a deep sump, a 2-quart deep sump with a metal baffle by LN Engineering because the car will be taken on track next year. And cooling issues is one of the main issues with taking a 987.1 on the track. So I ended up installing a deep sump. Car doesn't leak. I did it correctly, and we will also be showing you how to do that with a video coming up in mid-October.
Now, were you surprised? This is completely changeover from your 987. How surprised were you by the views that you got on your little air-cooled delivery at the Experience Center, which I forgot that you were doing this video, and I saw it come out on E-Brake News.
And that my got first, ratioed pretty seriously.
Yeah, my first thought was, oh, they must be delivering a restored 911. I'll click on it to watch it. Yeah, and then as soon as I clicked on, I saw the bike, and I thought,
that was total clickbait.
Yeah, it was clickbait. I think about as many people appreciated that as they didn't, but we're happy you guys are all watching the video. It's not April 1st, but it could have been a good April 1st joke. But basically, we had two members took delivery of a Porsche e-bike at the Experience Center, which itself, Porsche won't allow you to do that. But we wanted to have a little bit of fun and see what the Porsche e-bike could do around the test track. So we had one of PCNA's employees on a pedal-powered bike racing the new owner of an e-bike, and the e-bike owner won. But it was all in good fun, and we hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's some people are way too serious. Some of these comments. I mean, yes, it was clickbaitish. I agree, but it was all in good fun. But back to the e-bike that Porsche produces, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about this trip, this bike trip that we just recently did. It is the Porsche of e-bikes, and it is a legit e-bike. And the people that brought them on our 350-mile plus trip, they would have paid double for it because it really saved their bacon on the long trip. So was it clickbaitish? Yes, but hopefully people just thought it was funny. I enjoyed it. And surprisingly, it's doing well because of the title, but you're seeing a little bit about what Porsche delves into on the bicycle side. This is not the first time that they've built a bike. The bikes that we brought on this trip started, the first ones were built in 1996. So we had the full lineup of bikes, but we'll talk about that in a second. But hopefully people enjoyed that. But we'll get back to our regularly scheduled programming with Porsche content here with the next video.
Yep, exactly.
So up next, we're going to go to the bike story. By the way, that electric bike,
yeah,
I think costs as much as that 944 you were looking at in Mark Fresh.
Between the two of them, yes. One of them, I think, was like $8,500, and the other one's like $10,500.
Yeah, so that's nothing to sneeze at. That's what good Boxster was costing 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, but I think e-bikes in general are thousands of dollars. You definitely have to.
I think it's a good alternative. If you don't want to train for something, buy one of these e-bikes, right?
I'm not going to call out the person that brought their bike on this trip, but it definitely helped them because they didn't train as hard as others, and they made it. Like I said, 350, 360 miles, just like the rest of us. And they were in good spirits.
Yep.
Gregory Brown.
Hey.
Longtime PCA member, longtime friend of mine. Thanks for joining us. He's here today because we just got back from this long ride from DC to Pittsburgh on bicycles. Yes, on bicycles. But we were all on Porsche bikes. And this was sort of the brainchild of Jim Hemig, our director of marketing, who is like the Porsche bike whisperer, as well as our president, Tom Gorsuch. And they wanted to do a ride from DC to Pittsburgh, as the Gorsuch family did back in the day. And somehow eight others of us got roped into this and thought it would be a great idea to ride our bikes. And Gregory, I usually rope him into everything.
Yeah, he does.
In fact, I roped him in to coming here today. He thought we were doing this at our office, and here we are at the podcast studio on 5 North Main in Bel Air, Maryland. And we're happy to have you, and just want to get your thoughts on what you thought the trip was like. Was it what you expected?
Absolutely not.
Okay, first start off, he didn't realize it was 6 days. He thought it was five. But what's five versus six? What's the difference?
What's the difference?
Especially when you're biking, what, 60, 70 miles a day?
Absolutely. So the trip in itself was fantastic, to say the least. That was not what I was expecting. Mm. And so I kind of whispered in Vu's ear, I said, day three, I'm probably going to turn into a monster, thinking, again, that it was going to be 5 days, not 6 days. So what it turned out to be was a great group of people who turned into friends that had an experience, one adventure that is lifelong, something you'll remember for the rest of your life.
Kind of like the Titanic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You nailed it.
Now, we didn't go into this, you know, haphazardly, right? We talked about this, I think, in March or April. And for those of you that cycle and use the app called Strava, like, we've been training for this and trying to ride 20 miles, 30 miles, 40 miles. And we challenge each other. And we've been doing this all year. So most of us, we felt like we could do this. But you don't really know until...
Until you're actually doing it. Yep.
And we started with 10 people in DC, and we finished with 10 people in Pittsburgh, which to me is amazing. And Gregory knew most of the people, not everybody. This was not a PCA event, but it was mostly all PCA members. Mm-hmm. As I said, Jim Hemig, he's the Porsche Bike Whisperer, but he's also like a Porsche bike planning guru as well. So we just really kind of follow Jim along. You couldn't really get lost. You just make sure the canal's on your right for the CNO and follow the train tracks when you're on the Great Allegheny Passage. But, you know, that trip threw everything at us in terms of we had hot days, we had cold days, we had rain. We had hills, and we had mosquitoes, and we didn't stay at the most luxurious places. We wanted to do it on the cheap as well. And when you're that tired, does it really matter that you're in a hotel that's 4 stars or whatever? It doesn't. In fact, I don't think we were.
But you want at least 1 star.
I don't even think some of the places didn't even get a star. I mean,
interesting enough, the idea was thrown out. They asked whether or not we wanted to camp as well.
Heck no.
And so that was shot down quickly.
Yeah.
But there are people, as we could see, that were traveling that actually camped out. And so, to Vu's point, there's no way that I would have done that.
Yeah.
They never saw the Blair Witch Project, did they?
Obviously.
Filmed not. In Maryland.
Well, So when you're riding along for 60 miles a day, most of the time we were not grouped as, 10 riders, right next to each other. Each rider has sort of their own pace, mm-hmm. and there might be two at the front, two in the middle, a few in the back, and you might change up. But for most of the ride, you're riding with maybe one or two people and not all 10.
Yeah, I think that what we figured out day two is people kind of started to get into their groove whereas they knew the pace that they wanted to go at, and they were kind of comfortable with who they were riding with. Day one, I think we kind of bunched up and everybody was just kind of trying to feel their way through. But after that, to your point, what I started seeing initially was 6 and 4.
Yeah.
And so the 4 were the two couples. And then with the 6, sometimes you'd see 2 people, sometimes you see 4 people together, and sometimes you see all 6 people together. And I was clipped in. And because I was clipped in, I tried to make sure that I wasn't around too many people.
Which means what, clipped in?
So clipped in means that my shoes have a clip and the pedals so that you are connected with the bike. There's good and there's not so good with that.
I can't look at you with a straight face because I have to tell the story of him being
really
clipped in.
You don't have to.
You know, we're starting, we're all excited. We go to mile zero in D.C. and literally 10 feet from that little mile zero piece
it was actually
stone.
11 feet. I tipped.
Is this
over.
Your first time on Clipton shoes? Or?
So I'd been training with that for maybe 9 months or so.
Yeah. So the answer is no.
I try to give you an out here.
So he was, we were waiting on people. And the thing is, with clipped in shoes at low speeds, you always remember to unclip, because
right.
if you happen to stop, you got to put your foot down. Well, someone at mile zero or 11 feet away from mile zero made a little U-turn, forgot to unclip, and his nickname is now Turtle because he fell over and his legs and arms were in the air with a bike attached to him, just like a turtle.
Great experience, I promise. Great experience.
So we were a little bit worried that that was the first incident we had for our trip. But you know what? After that, okay, he turtled one more time later in the week. But you know, for having bikes that were, my bike was 26 years old. We had, you know, bikes of like vintage, and then we had the newer bikes. No one on the trip had any mechanical issues. The only thing that we had was a few flat tires, which you can expect from the hard terrain. We weren't riding on smooth roads. We were riding on gravel with sharp stuff everywhere.
And interesting enough, one of the bikes wasn't a mountain bike.
Yeah.
And so we had a road bike that was
with not us the right bike to bring on this trip. But that person, she rode it. She was determined to ride it, and she got through all of it.
Someone like me who's not into bikes, but I learned a lot watching you guys train for this and whatnot. This is like bringing a Formula One car on a world rally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And when they say this is a road bike, there's literally no tread on her tires.
No, we tried.
That's insane.
Yeah, we tried to when she shipped her bike to the office, and we tried to get her a different set of tires with a little bit more tread, with a little bit more width. Mm-hmm. But because the way the bike was designed as a road bike, we literally could only, it's a 723C tire that it comes with. And the largest that we could put on there was a 25, which is almost visually, you can't even tell. And it also had very little tread. So think about gravel, dirt, mud. That's the kind of conditions we were riding in. And she was doing it in the road bike. I bet you there's probably a handful of people that have ever done the CNO Canal and the Gap on a road bike.
And it was extremely inspiring to me, because the way that I thought about it is wow, if she can do that on that bike, I have no excuses. That's whatsoever.
Right. No excuses. And she had an out, because I have a standard mountain bike, Porsche mountain bike that she could have taken, but she was determined to ride.
I thought her out was the fact that her husband was driving the electric bike.
That's
what I thought the out was.
Did anyone catch the Freudian slip that Gregory just uttered? It was extremely expiring. And quickly said inspiring. I would have died.
Well, so the toughest day was Wednesday.
Yep.
Which it was, we had rode 72 miles the first day, 60 some miles the second day.
68.
Then the third day was, it's just going to be 34 miles.
Right.
Okay, that sounds like a piece of cake.
Yeah.
But it was 30 miles of uphill. They'll say officially.
34.
Officially, it was only, 20 some miles of uphill, but it was tough.
Right. That would have been extremely expiring.
Yeah. And then it was also cold and rainy.
And rainy. Yeah.
And yeah.
And speaking to that, she did it on a road bike. And so the funny thing about Wednesday was it looked like that hill would never end.
Yeah.
I mean, so you go around a curve to your left thinking that you would at least get a break or something in the road.
Not a single break.
So I was following this on the, Strava?
Strava.
Uh-huh. And Cindy would send me a link every morning so I could follow it on her on GPS. And they were getting close to the Paw Paw Tunnel, which is haunted.
Yes.
And we all know Boo does not do well with anything that's reportedly haunted.
Who does well with haunted things? I don't get that. You don't do well with haunted.
You ever watched a movie? White people. They love to go inside. Everyone else just says, we're out of here. So
we'll get to the haunted room as well after that.
So I saw the Paw Paw Tunnel coming up, and I even texted him with the link to remind him that this is a really haunted tunnel.
Right. And
in my head, I think they're all together. I'm thinking you guys, because, you got your little radios in your helmet, and I figured you're like a Peloton going together. Not that you've broken up into sometimes by yourself.
Right.
So then suddenly on the GPS, I start to see the squiggly line avoiding the Paw Paw Tunnel, and I'm like, oh, my God. He's making them take a detour so they don't have to go over through the Paw Tunnel.
In fact, I called the county and had them start demolition. Construction.
Not until after the ride that he texted and said they had to take a detour over the mountain.
That was going to be a
that
highlight.
Text is coming from inside the tunnel.
So that was one of the highlights that Jim was really looking forward to taking us through. It's the tunnel. I heard it was haunted, but we would go through it together. No big deal. We brought lights and everything, and
crucifix,
garlic, and whatever I needed.
Holy
to bring.
Water. That's
and,
right.
And once we got there, it was closed, and the detour was probably more scary than going through the tunnel. I mean, yeah. Detour was I don't know percent grade it was, but
because you're following a railroad trail, right? Yeah. So it's pretty level, so they dug through the mountain for the train to go through.
Correct. There's a reason why there's a tunnel because that hill is high.
Yeah.
And so now we're going around this detour that just is a narrow path, lots of rocks.
Yep.
You could ride up it maybe a quarter of the way, maybe a little bit more. But then it got so bumpy and so vertical, like you had to get out and push up the hill.
Right.
Now, those with the e-bikes, believe it or not, cruised right up on it because they had big fat tires and stuff like that.
So I think that Vu is being kind by saying a quarter of the way up. And I consider myself somebody that takes on a challenge. And I promise you, maybe 15, 20 feet tops, and then I had to stop and start pushing. And so,
as in walking the bike and pushing it up
there. And how much time did you guys spend crossing this mountain?
Oh, that was at least like a...
It varied. I'd say it varied because...
Like an hour and a half detour.
Yeah, it was probably on average about an hour and a half
detour. And was there other bikers doing the same thing, or were you the only one?
Yeah, and, there were other folks too. Everybody was
And
pushing.
There was somebody at the top of the hill that if you wanted to take the easy way out, he would have put your bike on a bike rack. I have no idea how much he was charging, but
I'm matter?
Sure.
Yeah.
He, oh, and so another priceless, and I wish I would have taken that.
Yeah. So there is like this cottage industry where, you know, people support everyone that's on these trails. And one is of course planning the trip, but then there's people that take our bags from hotel to hotel. But then this gentleman at the Paw Paw Detour, he had like this Camry with a bike rack on the back, and instead of you climbing that detour, he would put up and drive you up to the top of the mountain.
Yep,
that was his business.
So there was a road to go up. It wasn't just I envisioned this like barely makeshift trail to cross over.
There's a road to the top of that detour, but you don't as a biker you don't want to take that road because it would take you away from the trail.
Okay,
right. So to stay on the trail, you take that trail detour.
And so what's interesting about that detour was Vu mentioned going up, right? But it was just as dangerous going down.
Right. I'm still trying to get my arms around the hour and a half detour to avoid the allegedly haunted tunnel with the non-existent howling tunnel banshee.
The city or the county was doing some sort of demolition. So actually, we were able, once we got down the other side, you could go into the Paw Paw Tunnel.
Yes, you could.
And I did. I went in for like 10 feet and I turned around.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. Whereas I think... Tom went all the way through the tunnel, but you couldn't get out. That's the thing. Oh. So you'd have to turn around anyway, and it was pitch black, and my lighting wasn't good. That's my story. I'm sticking.
All right, I can see that. Yeah. Pitch black tunnel with the end
that
sealed
detour,
off.
That detour was, other than being scary or avoiding the haunted tunnel, that actually was a point in our trip that was truly scary because one of our riders had the front tire get swept away in front of her and took a tumble down a cliff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, the only thing I would say is it needs a better name. You know, Paw Paw Tunnel just doesn't sound scary. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but fortunately, she she is a trooper and
absolutely. And I kind of feel like that incident brought everybody together. And so day three.
If she had called it quits that day, I would have said
total respect.
Total respect. Absolutely. Totally understand.
Yeah.
But, So, it was a great trip. And We'll probably have to bring Jim Hemig to talk more about Porsche bikes. But at the end of the day, for those of you that are listening, if you don't have a Porsche bike, we hope you get one. But you know, even if you have any other bike, just get out there and ride, right?
Absolutely.
It's just like getting in your Porsche and going for a drive. It's a great way to disconnect. It's healthy for you. Mm-hmm. It can be a lot of fun, something you can do with the family and friends. And that's what it's turned into for us. But yeah, so we are at the top of the hour with our podcast, Porsche Club Insider here. Thank you so much to all of our guests. Thank you, Manny, for putting this together. Again, thank you to Podcast Studio 5th North Main. And a shout out to the coffee bar Bel Air for giving us a little bit of caffeine here to get started. And hopefully you've enjoyed the podcast. And if you do, let us know what you like about it. If you didn't like it, let us know as well. Potential topics down the road. We'd love to hear from you.